Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Welcome to the Wonder of Parenting podcast. My name is Tim Wright, and in this podcast, along with Dr. Michael Gurian, we use brain science research and best practices and our own experience as dads and as parents to talk with you as moms and dads about how to experience and enjoy the wonder of parenting. And we are in part three of a multi-part podcast series on how moms and dads parent differently. And this is actually, surprisingly, a pretty radical statement because so much of our culture right now seems to hold up mom's style of parenting as the gold standard, which it certainly is. But what we've been trying to say is that both moms and dads bring really unique gifts to the table. And these gifts, these assets, as Michael calls them, are really important, that our sons and daughters need both of them. And we've looked at a couple different differences, I guess, between moms and dads. And today we're going to look at a new one. And I want to do that by sharing with you a little story for you to imagine in your mind. And then we're going to tease it out a bit. So here's the scenario. You are sitting outside on the stoop or the porch of your front yard, and you are watching your son, and he's out playing with his friends. And, you know, maybe they're playing basketball, whatever it might be. And your son accidentally falls, and it's obvious he's hurt himself. Maybe scraped his knee, scraped his hand, and he's crying. Now, as you see this unfold, I want you to ask yourself the question, how would your husband respond in that moment to your son? Or how would your wife respond in that moment to your son? And what we're going to talk about today is that there may be some differences in response, and we want to talk about why that is and how that is and where that comes from. Michael, before we talk about how a father might respond to that scenario or a mom might respond to that scenario, summarize for us once again what you mean by bi-strategic parenting.
Okay, so bi-strategic parenting is the understanding that moms and dads parent differently, and that, as you said, they're both the gold standard. So there is no single gold standard. They're both the gold standard for parenting. And of course, then it fans out to grandparents, grandma, grandpa, male mentors, female mentors, you know, across the board. And that's kind of where the bi comes from. The bi comes from two, of course, but it also comes from binary, and sex and gender on the brain is binary. It also includes a gender spectrum, but the sex on the brain is binary. And we've talked about this, and we'll continue to talk about this, that gender is a social construct. Sex on the brain is biological. So male and female brain are set up differently. So male and female is binary in that sense. But then, of course, there's a spectrum for sexual orientation. There's a spectrum for that even includes transsexual or transgender. There is a spectrum. Also for people's perception of themselves and their gender. But on the brain, male and female brain are binary and they're different. So that means that all through life, the various ways males and females do things, we're going to find some differences. We're going to find a lot of overlap because everyone's human, but we're going to find a lot of differences. And one of the places where we find differences is in parenting. And so my argument, I know your argument and the argument of others, is that that's actually great. It's great that males and females parent or mentor differently, even with all exceptions noted. males and females do it differently, and our kids need both. So bi strategic is a respect for, not a judgment of, but a respect for these differences.
So let's take the scenario that I mentioned here just a few moments ago, and let's start with mom. And generally speaking, mom is sitting on the stoop. She sees her son fall. She sees her daughter fall. The child is injured. The child is crying. What's going on in mom's brain? What's going on in her chemical makeup? What is she experiencing? What's happening inside of her? And then how, generally speaking, would she respond?
Okay. So let me point out two out of the many, many differences that will affect this. When a female, a woman, girl is under stress, her oxytocin level goes up. That's her tendon befriend, her bonding chemical. When a male, adult or boy is under stress, his testosterone goes up. That's his fight or flight chemical. Okay, that's a big difference. So the mom is going to be shot full of a tendon befriend chemical because she's now under stress. So her stress hormone goes up, triggers this other reaction because she sees her child fallen, her child is hurting. So that's one. Number two, we've talked about the insula, that part of the brain that creates the mirror neurons, and that's where empathy, a great deal of empathy comes from, is the mirror neurons. So she sees her child fallen, her brain fills up with these mirror neurons, and you know, it's not uncommon that she would jump up if she can and go out to try to connect with that child and help that child. So those two are what are going on in the brain and in her biochemistry. And the whole package there is going to tend toward a kind of a limbic system response. And the limbic system response is emotive, right? It's sensorial emotive. It's all in emotions and all in senses. And it's not the prefrontal cortex in her brain. If she's not going to go try to you know, help that child, and I'm assuming now in your scenario the child is maybe 6, 7, 8, not
sure.
18, right?
Sure.
We're assuming
yes.
It's a little child.
Yep.
Or could be 2, 3, 4. In order for her not to do that, what would have to happen is that her prefrontal cortex, the top of her brain, the pathways between this limbic brain that's hit with the hormones and all this neurochemistry and the mirror neurons, it would have to send signaling up to the top of the brain, and the top of the brain would have to reroute and say, no, don't operate out of all of this emotion. Don't do it. But in her brain, that's going to be harder because it's so filled up with these mirror neurons and with this oxytocin. And so that's a lot of what we see. Now, a lot of moms will – their prefrontal will kicked in. And for instance, if it's a soccer game, and I'm going to pick an age, it's a 7-year-old in a soccer game, and it's not appropriate for her, obviously, to run out there. Of course, her prefrontal will kick in and say, okay, you can't run out there, of course. But if it's just sitting out there watching and that child starts to cry, I think we would likely see her run out there. I'm going to give one other quick caveat, though. Moms and dads operate slightly differently in this scenario, depending on whether it's a girl or a boy. So if it's her daughter, it's even less likely that her prefrontal will stop her from jumping out of her seat and going out there or in some way trying to help that child feel better. If it's a girl, less likely. If it's a boy, she is slightly more likely for her prefrontal to say, let's see what happens. And that's a nuance for both males and females when they parent boys and girls. We tend to be more protective of girls than boys.
All right, let's do the same thing with the dad. He's sitting on the stoop. He sees his son. Let's say start with his son, and then you can move to his daughter
yeah.
for that nuance.
Okay.
And what's going on in his brain? What's going on in his chemical makeup? What is he thinking? And then how does he respond?
Okay, so what we have now is we have the counterpoint to what I just described. So we have a male insula, which fills up with fewer mirror neurons, and they don't last as long. And that's also happening in the limbic system, in the midbrain. So he sees that you said to start with his son. So he sees that his son has fallen and is perhaps starting to cry and hold his knee or something. He does get mirror neurons, of course. He's empathic. He gets the mirror neurons. But he more quickly moves the signaling up to the top of the brain, the prefrontal and frontal, which starts making judgments about that. Is my son really hurt? If he cries for 5 seconds, would that be enough? If he cries for 10 seconds, would that be enough? Can he get back up there? Yeah, I think he can. Okay. Come on, son, get back up. You know, he doesn't run out there to help, let's say, in that scenario. We're going to assume the kid's bones are not broken here. You know, he and his mirror neurons will collapse. They'll drift away, and that's his response. Also, simultaneously, he sees his son hurt. So what's going to happen to his biochemistry? He's going to fill up. His cortisol level will go up. That's his stress hormone because he sees his son hurting. But then he's going to fill up with more testosterone, and testosterone is a fight or flight chemical. So if his son is being accosted by someone else, oh, of course he's going to jump up and go fight, right? But if his son is okay, and if his prefrontal cortex says, you know what, this boy's okay, let him process through it for 5 or 10 seconds, he'll get back up and start playing again, then his biochemistry, the testosterone, will support that. He'll flight. He'll withdraw. He'll say, oh, I don't have to be involved. I can withdraw. I can stand back. My son's going to take care of that. And his fight instinct doesn't have to kick in because his son's not in danger. So it is a somewhat different biochemistry, and that's part of why, to go along with socialization, it's part of why males and females parent differently. And let me add, just as I did with moms, that dads treat daughters and sons somewhat differently in that scenario. And this seems to be relatively universal worldwide, that dads are more likely to go in and try to rescue the girl than they are the boy, and they have to kind of battle their prefrontal cortex, sort of has to say to the midbrain, no, it's okay, even though she's a girl and you really, really want to rescue and protect her, it's okay, she's going to be fine. So there is a nuance of difference depending on the child, the sex of the child.
So I'm going to chase a rabbit here for a second. Is this propensity to want to protect the girl more than the boy, for moms and dads, is that biological? Is that nature, or is that culture?
Well, you know me, it's all three. It's nature, nurture, and culture. Everything's always nature, nurture, and culture. On the nature, okay, on the culture side, that's easy. Our whole culture, you know, most of the cultures we came from, are value the female body and protectiveness of female differently than male. So cultures in general will say, and we're going to go to the biology of why we think cultures do this. The biology is probably carrying children and childbirth and caring for children, but the cultures will say you gotta protect girls. They're a little bit more vulnerable than boys. Boys, you actually want them to be, you know, from very early on, not crying as much, being more independent, because later in life they're going to have to be. They're going to have to go out and fight and make a living, whereas, you know, girls maybe have the option, since they're going to have kids, women have the option, if they can do it financially, of not doing that, right? So the culture says what it says, and we think the reason cultures do that is because it comes, you know, it starts with nature, that people may make different choices based on their nature, and parents at the nurture level, parents unconsciously, naturally maybe, or unconsciously are looking at boys and girls differently and seeing that they got to do certain things to mature boys. They got to help boys be set up for a certain strength level later. And as some of this comes from boys predominantly being the soldiers of the last 10,000 years too. Whereas girls were not predominantly the soldiers and still are not. Girls likely 90% will have kids. You know, all of this gets mixed together. And so nature, nurture, and culture all together, I think, form this alliance in our parents in the brain where they look at female children differently than male children. Now, people will argue that it's bad to do that. I don't really think it's bad. It's just part of the way life is. And as we create strong and empowered girls, which I certainly have and you have, right? Your daughter's a lawyer. My daughter is going through law school. My other daughter manages a climbing gym. We have very strong, empowered women. I think you and I probably, when we were parenting our kids, looked at our daughters and at boys a little differently. But you still raise empowered daughters. So it doesn't really, I don't think, create harm, the slight nuanced difference between boys and girls. I don't see it as creating the harm that other people see. I just see it as a part of nature, nurture, and culture.
You're listening to The Wonder of Parenting with Dr. Michael Gurian. My name is Tim Wright. And we want to encourage you to head over to our website, to wonderofparenting.com. And there'll be some links there where you can learn more about the great work that Michael is doing and some of the work that I'm doing. particularly in our faith communities. There's also a place where you can go to subscribe to this podcast. We drop a new podcast every Monday, and you can either subscribe to it through our website, or you can go to Apple Podcast or Google Podcast. And if you'd leave a review, we would sure appreciate that as well. The more people listening in, the better. Michael, when a mom responds the way that she does to a child in crisis, and a dad responds to a child in the way that he does in crisis, it is, whether the parents know this consciously or subconsciously, they're teaching their child something, and they're teaching their child something important. So what is it that moms are teaching their kids or saying to their kids by this tendency to rush toward them to make sure they're okay? And what are dads saying by kind of stepping back and letting the kids shake it off?
Yeah. Well, and I want to answer that. Before I do, I also want to say to our listeners that we don't give Tim enough attention in these podcasts, and Tim is very generous and humble. But man, go to our website and look at what Tim is doing too. And Tim and I are, I think, a great example of bridge building, because Tim is a pastor and comes very much from the not solely, but very much obviously from a religious or a faith community. And I'm more secular, even though I'm a practicing Jew. I'm more secular, and my work is science-based and secular. And yet we have built for 11 years these sorts of programs, including this podcast. And we're an example of bridge building, trying to take in all points of view in bridge building. So I just want to put that plug in for
thank
you,
you,
Tim.
Yeah. Thank you.
In terms of your question, yeah, because these are assets that parents are bringing, that moms and dads are bringing to their kids, these assets are going to pass on as assets into the kids. So let's say in this scenario, it's the mom who jumps up. It's a five-year-old, and he has fallen, and he's skinned his knee, and he's holding his knee, and she jumps up to go to take care of him. Gosh, look at all the incredible things this boy is learning. He's learning about empathy. He's learning about how to take care of somebody. He's getting kind of soft sensorial touch, you know, because she touches his shoulder. She touches his skinned knee. She runs to get a Band-Aid, let's say, immediately, you know, which is so empathic, which is problem solving. So he's learning all of those things. And there's, unless she does it in an overbearing or embarrassing way to him, in an inappropriate way, let's say, he's going to get all of those assets from her. And ultimately, he's going to be so appreciative. And when he's an adult, he will have learned all of that empathy from her, and he'll be able to do that for others. Simultaneously, the dad in this scenario, let's say, did not rush out, even though we know this can switch between mom and dad. But in this scenario, the dad did not rush out. The dad stood back and maybe yelled, "Get up, get up. Come on, your team needs you," you know, or something like that. But then that's it. And then just trust the independence of the child and trust the child's ability to self-regulate his emotions and his tears and get back up to fulfill his calling or his purpose. The child learns all of those assets. The child learns that he can or she can get back up, that he or she can self-regulate his or her own emotions and get back up, and that he or she is needed inside the game that's being played, and that sitting down on the grass and holding the knee is not a purposeful thing, right? It's what he or she is feeling, but hey, it would be more purposeful to get back up and play the game. So both of these are crucial assets. And as you know, I call this the male-female difference between empathy nurturance and aggression nurturance. Dads are more likely, though mom certainly practice it, but dads are more likely to provide aggression nurturance, where the dad is understanding the calling and the purpose and the challenge of this aggression play and wants the child to get back into that aggression play and does not want to subvert the child's ability to get back into the competition or the motivation or the aggression play, because the dad respects it as being sacred. You know, it has a goal, and he wants the son to reach those goals, to win, or if to lose, then to learn from losing, but to be involved, to be purposeful, to be serving a cause like a game. The mom wants all those things too. It's just that first for the mom will be this direct empathy, where she's going to need to make this oxytocin-based contact, this mirror neuron contact, and try to help the child feel better so that the child can get back up and play. So they both want the same goal, and the child will learn both these sets of assets that the child will then carry forward.
Transform your home in one weekend and get big savings on everything for your project at Menards. Menards carries the largest selection of Purdy painting tools you need to get your painting project started. From brushes, paint, roller covers, and even paint kits. Hurry in and save big money on Purdy painting supplies. Get everything you need for your painting project at Menards. Plus, check out Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
So in your book, Nurturing the Nature, you summarize it this way. You say a mother tends to try to help the child quickly resolve inner emotional conflicts and stresses so that the whole bonding system can feel better. The child's immediate sense of distress or anxiety triggers the release of chemicals, especially oxytocin in the mom, which directs her to try to relieve these symptoms as quickly as possible. Whereas a father tends to try to help the child feel stronger. And we talked about this last time, the difference between mom wanting the child to feel better, dad wants the child to feel stronger. To try to help the child feel stronger in the long term, even if the child does not feel better in the moment. Fathers tend to care less than mothers about whether a child feels good. Fathers tend to want obvious shows of strength from children. This is especially true in their attitude toward their sons. So as we talked about last week, these two ways of parenting are vitally important to our children. They're a blessing to our children, but can also, like the other ones that we've talked about, cause some conflict when maybe dad thinks mom is being overly protective or mom doesn't feel that dad is really protecting the child at all. So how do we help parents navigate this particular parenting difference?
Yeah, that word protect, I mean, you've asked an awesome question, and it's the word protect that's in there. And so often, not always, but often, moms and dads have a different attitude toward what protecting my child is. And so I think the key, the strategy to solving these conflicts is for parents to talk together about what they mean by protect. Because both parents are actually operating out of a protective instinct. By the dad trying to get this child to be stronger, the dad is trying to protect this child. The dad is saying, you know what, by 18 or 20 or 22 or, you know, whenever adulthood starts now, it kind of starts maybe more at 25. But at a certain point, you know, you, son, or you, daughter, you are going to have to be strong because life is incredibly tough. And you're going to have to sacrifice yourself for others. You're going to have to raise a family. You're going to have to work hard and push through your 60-hour work weeks, you know, whatever it is. I have to do it. You're going to have to do it. And so I want you to be stronger. And it is not protective of yourself if I just let you mope and whine and et cetera. You got to get up and be strong. So he is actually protecting this child, okay? Mom, at the same time, is protecting this child. Mom knows all of that dad knows. But mom is saying the way to get to that goal where I have an adult who is going to be able to sacrifice himself or herself for others, fulfill a calling, work hard, raise kids, etc. The way to get there is I need to protect the child's inner emotional life. And I need to make sure that this child is capable of expressing his or her inner emotional life. And moms especially feel this way about sons because they already know that their daughters are pretty good unless their daughter suffers from a brain disorder or is chronically depressed or, you know, that would fit in a different category. But without mental health issues, if the daughter is developing, the mom can see that the daughter is constantly expressing feelings in some way. But with sons, especially around 9, 10, 11, the mom doesn't see it as much. So moms are especially cognizant of this with sons, that they're trying to get their kids to get to the big goal and the big future of maturation and resilience by making sure their inner emotional life is intact and expressed. And that is the key difference between the way moms and dads protect or women and men protect. Moms feel a deeper connection with that deep emotional life in most cases, and because they feel it, because they're living it out, right? They had so much of their interior life is emotive, and they're living it out. And we've talked in other podcasts of part of why this is, that the female brain moves its brain activity between left and right hemispheres. And so it brings in, through white matter activity, it brings in 5-10 emotional things at once, whereas male brain is moving its activity front to back. It doesn't cross over, and it only has a few verbal emotive connections and centers. So males don't spend as much internal time feeling all of these emotions, even though in a particular case they can if they've been terribly hurt. But in their daily practice, they don't. So moms are operating out of that interior emotional life, and they're going to also get their kid to the big goal of maturation and resilience. They'll get there, of course, but they're going to do it through the emotional life. So if parents can talk about that, they can stop stop bugging each other. Like, dads can stop saying to mom, okay, come on, you're coddling him too much. Or if dads say it, moms can understand where that comes from. And then moms can stop saying to dads, why do you tell him not to cry? That's bad. That's going to harm him. Because now the parents will not only have understood how the parents are trying to protect the kids, but they'll understand that they're bi-strategic. So the dad will trust the mom, and the mom will trust the dad. The dad will trust the mom that, yeah, the mom is having the son process all these feelings, which the dad wouldn't do. But then when the child is in dad's world, the child is going to do it dad's way. And so it's bi-strategic. So we don't have to worry about each other so much. We don't have to correct each other so much. We trust the other to do what he or she thinks is best in their realm. And then we trust that we're going to do it our way, in our realm with our child. And the parenting situation is set up that way. And so unless a child's being abused or something, that's going to work best for the child, and we don't have to argue.
You are listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, and we do want this to be your podcast as well. And so if you've got some questions that we can answer, parenting issues that you might be experiencing with your son or your daughter, or even between you and your spouse, there's a place where you can give a question for our podcast on our website, wonderofparenting.com, and encourage you to go there. There you're going to get a link to all the great things that Michael's written. He's written a lot of different books on boys and girls and parenting. You'll have a link to the work that Michael and I have done together, particularly for the faith community, in terms of rites of passage programs we've written for families and for churches. And we also have some rites of passage programs now for those who are not involved in a faith community. So we encourage you to check out that link. And also, we hope that you will subscribe to this podcast. Go to Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts and make sure you leave a review. We would sure appreciate that. So the next time we get together, we're going to talk about one more difference between moms and dads and the way that they parent. And we're going to spend a little bit of time also talking about, what do you do if dad's not in the frame, or if mom's not involved in the family, or if you're a same-sex couple? How do you get that other sex involved in the parenting process along with you? So on behalf of Michael Gurian, my name is Tim Wright. Thank you so much for listening to The Wonder of Parenting.
Thanks, Tim.